From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on November 21st, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. We got a programming note for you. We are taking next week off to give thanks. Instead, if you need a fix from us, well, I will recommend that you check out the Who, What, When Thanksgiving episode.
Interesting.
That's right. It's one of South Carolina Public Radio's newest shows, Who, What, When. And you can find that episode wherever you find podcasts. Gobble, gobble. Some of my friends are here with me. Guys, keep it down. I'm trying to record. Eat the hay. On this episode of The Lead, we look at the first estimate of how much money lawmakers will have to budget with next year. Trust me, it's good. A state education panel is evaluating four books to be removed from classrooms across the state. We look at the books and the process. We also follow up on a congressional UFO or UAP hearing, thanks to Congresswoman Nancy Mace's subcommittee hearing earlier this week. And we also get an update on U.S. House bathroom policy. We round out the show with more economic data. And a look at Thanksgiving travel. Speaking of Thanksgiving, what are you doing for the high holiday? Are you eating turkey? Which, they're everywhere still. What do turkeys eat? Do you know? 803-563-7169. I know what my favorite Thanksgiving Day dish is. You'll find out in the wind down. If you don't already know, if you're an avid listener, you probably know. You guys know. It's the green bean casserole. Let's start off by talking about how much money this horrible economy isn't sending to state coffers. Wait, no, that is a script that I'm being told was based off of polling and not facts. Yeah, no, here's one based on facts. State lawmakers will once again have a surplus of dollars to budget with next year, and recurring revenues continue to grow because our state and economy are growing.
Get out of here.
Well, this is news you don't hear every day unless you don't follow or believe the news. But alas, that is what we are here for, to tell you the facts. In fact, members of the Board of Economic Advisors met Tuesday to evaluate tax and fee revenue numbers as they prepare revenue forecasts for lawmakers who will soon start crafting the fiscal year 2026 budget, which takes effect on July 1st. The Economist said personal income, the primary driver of revenue collections, has continued to grow faster than expected, leading to higher income tax withholdings, consumer buying power, and revenue collections. Here's Frank Rainwater, Director of the Revenue and Fiscal Affairs Office.
We expect to benefit from the recent and current above average growth in the short run on our revenue estimates, but we expect this to decrease slightly to slightly below normal growth by the end of fiscal 26. So we're still riding this wave, but we expect it to level out and get us back to a normal playing field or normal environment by the end of fiscal 26. We expect both wages and interest and dividend income to slow down closer to the historical trends. We have lower inflation, lower interest rates, labor market dynamics, and just geopolitical issues. We expect things to get back to a normal environment. The economy is still growing very well, but revenues will be slowing a little bit. Employment, we still expect migration and economic development to keep employment growth higher in South Carolina than the nation. We're in a good position here, but we're going to see a little bit lower employment growth over the next couple of years as labor demand slows.
Thank you, Frank. That sounds good. Now, just what he was talking about there, the end of fiscal year 2026 would be June 30th, 2026. Yes, it's kind of hard to think about, but that fiscal year 2026 starts July 1st, 2025, ends June 30th, 2026. BEA analysis found that South Carolina's personal income and employment are expected to grow through the current fiscal year and into the next, like we were talking about, although growth is expected to slow from the above average rates experienced in recent fiscal years. We're about to start finding that nice little plateau and maintain. Now, the BEA forecasts $13.98 billion for lawmakers to budget with in that 2026 budget. And that includes $1.1 billion in one-time dollars and $533 million in new recurring revenue. That's money that comes back every year that they can rely on. So, you know, if you're looking to give pay raises to teachers or state employees, that's where that money typically comes from. Now, growth in the revenue forecast over the budget base is sufficient to enact the next individual income tax rate reduction from 6.3% to 6.2% for tax year 2025. That will, of course, impact how they can budget in next fiscal year, but still, that means that the income tax rate will go down by 0.1% if lawmakers approve, which means good for you, taxpayer. So here's a math problem even I can follow. Don't ask for my SAT scores. I will not tell you. I'll tell you, not good. More money plus income tax relief equals good.
Wow.
Divided by strong economy equals still good. I know. It's really easy to do this, folks. One of my turkeys. You're still on the menu. We'll have more economic news later in the show. It's not as good. Let's talk about book bans. The committee tasked with evaluating books and materials for schools met Thursday to evaluate four books that could be removed from all South Carolina public schools. The Instructional Materials Review Committee heard testimony on HMH Into Literature 8th Grade, Bronx Masquerade by Nikki Grimes, The House on Mango Street by Sandra Cisneros, and Crank by Alan Hopkins. Now, they were still having that meeting during our taping, so I'll get you those recommendations that will be sent to the full State Board of Education for a vote at its December 3rd meeting. Now, previously, on October 31st, that committee recommended banning the following books, which the full State Board of Education then voted to ban on November 5th. Those books were Damsel by Alana K. Arnold, Ugly Love by Colleen Hoover, Normal People by Sally Rooney, and four books by Sarah J. Maas. Now, for some background, in July, the State Board of Education unanimously passed Regulation 43-170, which became effective pursuant to the South Carolina Administrative Procedures Act. Now, this regulation establishes consistent definitions and a two-pronged threshold test for local educators and boards to determine if materials available to students in public schools are 1. Age and developmentally appropriate, and 2. Educationally suitable and aligned with the purpose of South Carolina's instructional program. Now, no complainant shall file more than 5 petitions in any given calendar month. We're going back to Congress, guys.
Why?
Because they're in session, the State House isn't, so I gotta look for some news from somewhere.
Fine.
And actually, we're gonna go back to space. We're going back to space. Yeah, that's right. It's a follow-up to the UAP House Subcommittee meeting earlier this week that was chaired by Nancy Mace, our congresswoman from the 1st District. And in fact, this was a different one. It took place over in the Senate with John Kozlowski, who is the director of the Defense Department's All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, ARO. We talked about ARO in our previous episode. He testified on November 19th on oversight of his office and government activities related to Unidentified Anomalous Phenomenon, UAPs, guys. Used to be UFOs. It's UAPs now, okay? I'm sorry. And this came during a Senate Armed Services Subcommittee hearing chaired by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and Senator Joni Ernst. Here is part of Kozlowski's overview of his department before we get into some unexplained UAPs that they are investigating.
You'll see that many reports resolve the commonplace objects like birds, balloons, and unmanned systems, while others lack sufficient data for comprehensive analysis. Although only a small percentage of reports received by ARO are potentially anomalous, these are the cases that require significant time, resources, and a focused scientific inquiry by ARO and its network of partners. It is important to underscore that, to date, ARO has not discovered any verifiable evidence of extraterrestrial beings, activity, or technology. To accomplish ARO's national security mission, I have set 3 priorities for the office: building strong partnerships, promoting transparency, and scaling up the work of the office. ARO cannot do its work alone. Building partnerships across government, academia, industry, and with the public is essential to the success of the office. Strong cooperation with the military services is particularly important. We rely on their support to implement our reporting guidance and to amplify the message that there should be zero stigma associated with UAP reporting.
Like you heard there, they have not discovered any verifiable evidence of extraterrestrial beings, activity, or technology. I'm sorry, I know it's sad. You know, would have been cool, maybe. Now, he himself is calling for greater transparency, which is what we've been hearing lawmakers talk about as well, and also calling to destigmatize UAP reporting. The lead has always wanted to believe.
Dr. Scully.
And we will continue our policy of reporting UAP. You can do so by calling 803-563-7169. But you're saying, Gavin, how come we can't see all of the photos and videos? Why can't we do this or that? People love to scream and shout, and they're saying they're hiding the truth.
Scully.
I'm all for seeing things, being transparent. This is Kozlowski's reason for classification.
In some cases, it may be unclear to the public why the DOD classified a piece of information in the first place. Why are photos of seemingly benign objects, such as balloons, classified? It's often the case that an object or phenomenon isn't itself a security concern, but the location, source, or method used to capture it is still sensitive. Many cases are difficult to quickly release to the public, but are reported to the appropriate committees in Congress that are authorized by law or House and Senate leadership to receive the information. It is important to note that AERO does not unilaterally declassify information. Instead, we work with the originator of a classified record to ensure that declassifying that record does not inadvertently harm national security.
Okay, well, I guess national security, you know, that's kind of important. Now, Kozlowski said there has been an increase of reporting what has been determined to be satellites, though. Specifically, Elon Musk's low Earth orbit Starlink satellites. Yes, they're junking up the sky and they catch some glint of light during sunset and sunrise. People think it's a UAP. It's the internet, guys. There's also a lot of UAPs that turn out to be balloons. And ARRO is also getting weekly reports from the FAA. So they're getting some more details from pilots and aviators out there. But Kozlowski did give some unexplainable UAP they are analyzing.
Three cases that merit analysis that we're working on right now. One we might be in the process of resolving, but nonetheless is still interesting. The first one was brought to us by a law enforcement officer out west, where he observed a large orange orb floating several hundred feet above the ground a couple miles away. He went to investigate what was going on with that orb. And as he was pulling up to the location where he thought would be below the orb, about 40 to 60 meters away from some object, the area was well lit. He saw a blacker than black object. He said it was about the size of a Prius, 4 to 6 feet wide. And as he got 40 to 60 meters away from the object, it tilted up about 45 degrees, and then it shot up vertically. He says 10 to 100 times faster than any drone he's ever seen before. And it did that without making a sound, as far as he could tell from inside of his vehicle. And just as it left his field of view through his windshield, then it emitted very bright red and blue lights that illuminated the inside of his vehicle as brightly as if someone had set off fireworks just outside his vehicle or street flares. So that's anomalous because of the size of the vehicle with the great acceleration. And when he came back to investigate that area, he found no disturbance of the ground beneath it. So that's one interesting one. Another one comes to us from Southeast U.S., there was a U.S. facility where two cars of government contractors were leaving the facility around 9 o'clock in the morning. They looked up in the sky and saw a large metallic cylinder about the size of a commercial airplane, and it was stationary. They observed that there was a very bright white light behind or around the object. They saw it stationary for 15 to 20 seconds, and then it disappeared. Obviously, an object that large, stationary, unless it's a blimp, is unusual, but then disappearing, we can't explain how that would happen. And then the last case was interesting. We had an aircraft that was flying parallel to another aircraft, and it was capturing imagery of it, and a small-looking object appeared to fly between the two of them much faster than them. Through very careful analysis, we think that the object might have actually been further away than the object that it was videotaping, but it requires very careful analysis to come to those conclusions, and we don't have the metadata to support that yet.
All right, this pod is borderline turning into a UAP pod. But folks, I'm just following up on this here. News is kind of slow right now. And hey, let's get some more info on this. Since everyone was calling for greater transparency, you got some. Sticking with Congress, with the new session set to start soon, there is jockeying among House members for committee chairmanships. These are big deals when you get one of these spots. Now, unlike in the Senate where seniority rules, House members jockey for key roles and make their case to the steering committee during the first week of December. Punch Bowl News reports that the House Foreign Affairs Committee has a four-way contest between Representatives Ann Wagner of Missouri, Daryl Issa of California, Brian Mast of Florida, and South Carolina's 2nd District Congressman Joe Wilson. Wagner is favored to win and would be the only woman elected to chair a full committee next Congress. Wagner is close to leadership and was ambassador to Luxembourg under former President George W. Bush. Wilson, who is co-chair of the Ukraine caucus and is the most senior in the group, alas, this isn't the Senate, and is not set to win. Now, mi casa no su casa. 1st District Congresswoman Nancy Mace pushed to ban transgender women from using women's restrooms and locker rooms in the Capitol, a move the Lowcountry Republican said is aimed directly at incoming Delaware Democrat Representative Sarah McBride, who will be the first transgender member of Congress. Here's Mace.
I want to make sure that no men are in women's private spaces, and it's not going to end here. This shouldn't be going on any federal property. If you're a school or an institution that gets government funding, this kind of thing should be banned. I think it's sick. It's twisted. I have fought like hell for women's rights. I mean, 25 years ago this year, I became the first woman to break the glass ceiling and graduate from a military college that was formerly all male. And to see the way that I've been attacked today and last night for fighting to protect women and girls, it's ridiculous. So if that being a feminist makes me an extremist, I'm totally here for it.
Is this effort in response to Congresswoman McBride's coming to Congress?
Yes, and absolutely, and then some. I'm not going to stand for a man. If someone with a penis is in the women's locker room, that's not okay. And I'm a victim of abuse myself. I'm a rape survivor. I have PTSD from the abuse I've suffered at the hands of a man. And I know how vulnerable women and girls are in private spaces. So I'm absolutely 100% going to stand in the way of any man who wants to be in a women's restroom, in our locker rooms, in our changing rooms. I will be there fighting you every step of the way.
How do you think the speaker should address this? Just in the House rules package, or?
The House rules package would be fine, but we can't stop there. I mean, I'm working on legislation that would ban it on federal property. I'm working on legislation, if you are a school that is funded by the federal government, this shouldn't go on. And if I'm being fought like this as a member of Congress across the country by mainstream media like you, imagine what the underage girl goes through at her school. The shame, you know, seeing a biological male in a women's space, in a girl's restroom, or in her locker room, it's crazy.
Mace there keeping up that Winnie attack line on transgender people who are a significant minority in this country. In fact, transgender teens and non-binary teens with restricted bathroom access face greater risk of sexual assault in schools, according to the LGBTQ teen study that was released in 2019. So if there are any sexual assaults happening, usually it's against these people, not them committing it to other people, which is rarely documented. Speaker Mike Johnson announced Wednesday that transgender women are not permitted to use bathrooms in the Capitol that match their gender identity. Now, in a statement, McBride said in part, quote, "I'm not here to fight about bathrooms. I'm here to fight for Delawareans and to bring down costs facing families. Like all members, I will follow the rules as outlined by Speaker Johnson, even if I disagree with them," quote. Switching to the economy, South Carolina saw its unemployment rate tick up in October, even as the economy remained strong. The unemployment rate moved to 4.7% in October. That was a 0.2 percentage point increase from December and a 1.7 percentage point jump from last October, this according to the Department of Employment and Workforce. SCDU Director William Floyd said this first post-Hurricane Helene report did not show a significant spike despite a swing in the number of unemployed people. Now, for October, total payroll in the state declined by 3,500 jobs. That net loss was driven by professional and business services, as well as leisure and hospitality, followed by manufacturing, trade, transportation, and utilities. Now, those job losses were partially offset by strong job gains in the education and health services sector to the tune of 3,000 jobs and 1,300 construction jobs. Bethany Green, a Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond regional economist, said despite the October fluctuations, the state's job growth remains solid, saying, quote, "total payroll employment in South Carolina declined, mostly due to the impacts of Hurricane Helene. However, the state continues to see solid annual job growth," quote. South Carolina's 4.7% unemployment rate is above the nation's 4.1%, but hey, This is the big chill that the Fed's been talking about trying to do to cool down the labor market because everyone's mad about inflation. Now, we can expect to see those numbers possibly continue to go up because one of our biggest manufacturers, Boeing, will be cutting 220 jobs at its North Charleston plant as part of its company-wide 10% workforce reduction. The Charleston Business Report said that the aerospace giant filed a WARN notice with the Department of Employment and Workforce that those positions would be eliminated on January 17, 2025. North Charleston is the exclusive home to all three models of the twin-aisle 787 Dreamliner. The plant employs about 7,500 workers, according to the Department of Commerce. And looking at travel on the way out. It's Thanksgiving. Everyone's going to be moving and grooving. Roads, airports, and even cruise ship terminals could be more crowded this year as nearly 80 million people are expected to travel during Thanksgiving, according to AAA. And this was reported by NPR Now. This year's projections are for a 7-day period from the Tuesday before and the Monday after Thanksgiving. AAA projects that nearly 72 million people will travel by car, which is good news if you're in South Carolina because the average cost of a gallon of regular gas is $2.76, which is below the national average of $3.06. About 6 million Americans will travel by plane within the U.S. That's a 2% increase from last year. In an effort to meet that demand, U.S. airlines will provide 150,000 more seats each day than Thanksgiving last year. This is according to Airlines for America. So, meeting that demand with supply. This is neat. Now, we are off next week because we are traveling with 80 million other people. They're coming with me. No, I didn't buy extra seats for them. Come on, girls! Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. Lead podcast producer A.T. Shire, I'm glad you're here.
My friends.
Go. Your turkeys.
Yes.
Yeah. They travel with him all the time. They're his publicist. He has a masseuse that he goes with him because his back locks up. It's a big entourage that Gavin rolls
this
with.
This one's my hype guy.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for understanding.
Guy. Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's Thurston. He's the best.
They do make quite a mess. And I know they can hear me, but they make quite a
mess. Gavin, cover their ears because we are going to talk favorite Thanksgiving foods.
Ooh,
okay? Yeah.
They hate this topic.
They hate this. So, Gavin, I want to start out. I want to start
the
by
annual
saying,
disclaimer from AT on Thanksgiving.
I don't like Thanksgiving food. Turkey is the worst bird to eat.
Don't listen, girls.
No, they like this because I don't like eating turkey.
I know, but they like to be loved, and that's how we show our love for them by eating them.
If it was good, we would eat it more often. Anyway, Gavin, let's get a Gavin Jackson, the GJPI, the Gavin Jackson Power Index of Thanksgiving foods here. Okay?
Ooh.
So number one, with a bang.
Green bean casserole.
GBC.
Hi.
Disgusting.
The GJPI GBC, number one. Always is, always will be.
It's not fully disgusting.
You know,
it's just, well, I take umbrage. I take some umbrage.
How dare you?
When an ingredient to a meal or a dish is a full thing, like a can of Campbell's soup.
The
you
Midwest
know what I mean?
Is just rolling their eyes.
Yeah.
Right now.
Or like pre-done things. I don't love that.
Yeah, I get you on that. And I'm sure there's probably a more like a fancier way to make
a very
bespoke
one. Yes.
Which maybe I'll pioneer.
Yes.
Oh, no, I cream my own mushrooms.
I've creamed my own corns.
Everyone's going to, don't use that clip. I fry my own onions. Like, how do they even do that? No one knows.
It's
who could
so
say?
Easy.
But they're delicious. It's America
they
to
They are
me.
Good.
It was there at the first Thanksgiving. We have the documentation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Number two on the GJPI would have to be just your solid mashed potatoes and gravy.
That's
food group right there.
Strong pull right there. You're getting two for one in that because you get the mashed potatoes, you get the gravy.
You can't really have one without the other, in my opinion.
Yeah, but the gravy goes on everything, too.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe we can just put gravy. Mm-hmm. We can just put that over everything, literally, because that's what we're
literally
gonna
do. And figuratively. Yes.
The stuffing, the dressing, if you will, in the South, whatever you want to call it.
That's strong for me.
Yeah.
I like that, you know?
If
If done correctly,
it's
fantastic.
It's one of the best things on the table, easily.
You know, and then the mac and cheese is always such a crutch for so many different events.
It is it's homogenous throughout the South at basically every sort of family get together. Like, you can access pretty good mac and cheese year round. So,
yes.
I mean, I'm nonplussed by the mac and cheese on the table.
I'm thinking of the table. I don't really care.
I'm gonna go to my mental table real quick.
I'm not big on. I guess we can pay. And then I'll put turkey there because I do enjoy the turkey,
Disgusting. Especially
if done correctly.
It's so
with
bad.
The gravy.
Rare to do it.
If
correctly.
You get it smoked these days, oh god, I had some Hudson smoked turkey. It was fantastic.
Shout out Chris. You gotta part out the turkey and cook them because it all takes different times and it doesn't cook right as one unless you spatchcock it.
I still want to do a deep fried turkey or get one from Popeyes or Bojangles.
I heard the Popeyes and Bojangles turkeys are pretty banging.
I'm sure they're fantastic.
I am desirous of eating one of those.
We should do that.
I would eat it on air. No gripes. I would get it. I'd get my fingers all over the board and the grease in the mics.
Oh God, I love this.
So
one.
Do you want to go
things I don't like on Thanksgiving?
Let's hit this, Gavin.
I love sweet potatoes on their own, but when you start doing like the sweeter sweet potatoes and then you put the marshmallows in there.
That's gross.
I don't really understand it.
I don't like sweet potatoes one bit. I don't like yams.
Oh, I love sweet potatoes.
I'm not a tuber person per se. Gourds and tubers, not for me.
This is
what
this
we're
guy.
Talking about this whole meal. Think about what's in the cornucopia.
If you're driving, close your eyes, think of the cornucopia.
Thank you.
Do not close your eyes if you're driving your car. If I had to say that, come on, you're probably not driving the car. Desla drives my car.
Desla.
It's a Desla. Other things I don't care for.
I think that's a great pull for the bottom rungs of your
the
GJPR.
Cranberry sauce. I don't really understand that either. The can. Now, if you're going to do it, I want to see the lines of the can imprinted on the cylindrical gel.
When I see the cranberry sauce love, it reeks of post-irony to me, okay? It's like we hated it. Then we pretended to like it, and now, like Creed, we all really like
it's a whole sleeper thing. But can I tell you, I do like a little of the cranberry on a post-Thanksgiving Day post, like, talk about it next day.
You're talking about the gobbler.
Put that on there afterwards.
You're talking about...
And then I'm like, I see the light.
If anyone has been to a Wawa during Thanksgiving, you can get a gobbler.
I got it at Swamp Rabbit Grocery up in Greenville recently, and it was fantastic.
The gobbler is good. We're selling one at Craft and Draft out of Nirmo right now.
Okay.
Yeah, we got a gobbler.
And that, it hits right there in a way that doesn't work for me by itself on Thanksgiving
Absolutely.
Day. Absolutely. The roll, I kind of just put it on there as decoration.
Filler.
You don't want to slow down with extra carbs.
You want a good looking plate, and a good looking plate has a roll on it, but you don't eat it. There's no point in eating it. Cream corn.
Parsley.
Cream corn is not good.
I made a
cream
dish
corn
with,
is not good.
With parsley last night, and I just rolled my eyes. But actually, added
you don't like
a little
parsley?
Something. I am a cilantro person.
Have you never had tabbouleh?
Oh, God.
Speaking of my Thanksgivings, tabbouleh?
Wow.
I'm going to throw tabbouleh.
Well, I mean, it's completely diced and sliced and mixed up in
it's
there.
So good.
By itself, I can eat like cilantro and be like, well, this is amazing. Parsley's like, bah, bah, bah.
This is very interesting.
But it does
I never
add
knew
something to me.
I feel like I know everything about you at this point. And learning these new little weird things, this is interesting
to
me.
This is what the listeners are here for. This is what's on our Patreon, guys.
Yeah, this is a sneak peek. We're opening the vault for Thanksgiving. Okay?
And if you're wondering why I was chopping up parsley, it's because I defrosted frozen sardines, cut their little heads off, cut up their little bellies.
And I ate only the heads.
And then I ate just the heads. Made this delicious sauce.
Yeah.
You know, this Greek sauce that I made, you know. Dijon mustard has been a little bit of a sleeper here.
I like Dijon.
Dijon lemon juice, olive oil.
It sounds
paprika,
like you're talking like a little agrodolce, my guy.
Diced up some garlic. Put that in the little bellies. Put them in the oven for 15, 20
minutes. Interesting. This sounds good.
And then I put it on top of some romaine. My little romaine.
Gross. The worst.
No, if you sear the romaine a little bit, gives it some love. You put that sauce on there.
I love that your tinned fish affinity has become mainstream.
I'm learning that they live outside the tin.
Yeah.
It's like when you realize that milk doesn't come from the grocery store. It comes from a cow. It's fascinating.
Yeah, there's some argument over that. Anyway, people.
Leave it on that.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
We'll find
out soon. Listen to the Who, What, When. I work very hard on it. I maybe play a turkey named Tony Turcone. Who knows?
All the turkeys want you to listen to.
We love these guys. They got to be in studio rest of the year. Anyway, people, have a good week. Gavin, say goodbye.
We come back and I'm like, hey, where are all the turkeys going? You're like, oh my God.
Turns out I actually do love turkey. And I ate all your entourage.
Where's Thurston?
Thurston? No!
Thank you all for listening to the pod. You can show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or a voicemail at 803-563-7169. We gave you a lot of Thanksgiving takes right there. Hopefully you're listening to us while you're on your way to Thanksgiving or coming back from. Give us a shout, 803-563-7169. Let us know how it was and what you're thankful for. We're thankful for you. You can stay up to date with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Indiana's the dog's name.
Named the dog Indiana.